Welcome back to the Zero to Hero podcast. This is your host, Denny Dumas, producer Carl. He's perched up there on his stool. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Good. Today, we are on location at the Silver Valley Brewery in Maple Ridge. Very cool little tasting room down here. If you haven't seen it, come check it out on 224th. Owner of the brewery, Kevin Fulton. How are you doing, buddy?
Good. Yep. Co-owner.
Co-owner,
yes.
Thanks so much for taking the time tonight. We are pretty stoked to come out and, first of all, test out the beer, but chat with you a little bit about the beginnings of the brewery as well.
Okay, happy to have you.
Yeah. Kevin, so we're going to get a little bit into Kevin's backstory, but according to your website, a very passionate home brewer turned into this, what we have today.
Yes.
So I'm super interested in hearing.
There's a little bit of things that happened between that.
Fair enough.
Yes.
I'd love to hear a little bit of your background. I know you're talking about, I guess, educational wise was graphic design.
Yeah. I've done a lot of things. The most recent one before this, I was a graphic and industrial designer for a tap handle company here in Maple Ridge. That, you know, I did a lot of things before that. I did sales, I did design, you know, designing audio systems and video systems. I did music, a whole bunch of different things. But that's the one that basically got me into craft beer, or actually knowing what craft beer was. I was a tap handle designer. We did ceramic tap handles for a lot of people in the industry, some of them local here. A lot of them were down in the States, like Brooklyn Brewing. Thirsty Dog, a whole bunch of them down there. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, if you're working on something like that, and all you know is the fanciest stuff you know is OK Springs or something like that, eventually you're going to be like, well, what is this stuff and where do I get it? So you go to a private liquor store where they have a little bit more selection. Got my first couple of bottles under my belt and everything. And of course it just completely blows your mind and palate. It's kind of a shocker. You don't know whether you like it or not to start with.
That's how I felt about IPAs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the first one I had, I went hard into it. So Brooklyn Brewing, they had these beers. One was called One and another one was called Two. And I think it was like a really hoppy saison with like orange peel and all that other stuff. Didn't really know what ABV was or IBUs or anything were. So I just started drinking it. I was like, oh, this is a lot. And then you sip it. The more you sip it, the more you can kind of deconstruct it. I was like, wow, this is really good. And then I was basically chilling, watching a movie, and then you go and stand up and then you're like, whoa, wait a second.
All been there.
Yeah. And then I go look at the bottle and it was like an 8.5% or something. And I just wasn't used to that, but it was delicious. So that was the end of my night and it was a happy end. And that really got me into it.
How long ago was that? Cause that it seems like that would be where the love affair with craft beer started.
Yeah, knowing what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was probably 6 years ago.
Okay.
Ish. I don't know. Time's all over the place now after you open a business. but yeah, it was, yeah, something like that. It was probably about 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
I didn't know it at the time, but I had my first craft beer when I was 18. When, not that anybody should have a beer at that time. So, but when you're working at a place, I won't say what it was. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, even though it was like almost 20 years ago, whatever. But when you're a young man and you walk into establishment surrounded by 30-year-olds and you walk in like you know what you're doing, you get to try some cool things. So I was just about to order some kind of lager and my buddy goes, no, you're not having that. Try this. And it was Shaftesbury Cream Ale. And okay, I didn't know it at the time, but that was the first craft beer that I had. And so everything that I had after that was, as a young man, was compared to that beer. The closest thing I could find out here was OK Springs, like their pale ale or something.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, I would show up to parties with a six pack of OK Springs and people would say, where's your sweater vest and all that kind of stuff and make fun of me because
even 6 years ago, right?
Yeah. I guess... This was when I was like, this is when you're a young man. Okay,
yeah.
Yes. I'm not a young man now. So this is when I was a young man. But yeah, you show up at a party full of like 19 and 20 year olds where you spend, I guess at the time was like $13 on a six pack instead of $10 on a six pack, you get made fun of. So anyway, it was about 5-6 years ago when I knew what it was. And then knowing that, hey, it's not just this, it can be Belgian, it can be German, it can be all North American and still be German and Belgian and all that kind of stuff. And then there's West Coast IPA, there's an English IPA, there's all these different kinds of stouts. Discovered I love stouts and porters, all those things. And then when you go into, and the big benefit of being, for anybody listening, if you get a job where the company you're working for is a sponsor of craft beer events, you get passes.
Absolutely.
And then if you haven't discovered stuff at your local liquor store already, then it's like walking into Charlie's Chocolate Factory where the rivers are made of beer and all that other stuff. So you get to try a whole bunch of different things. And that's when it really started to take off. And working for that company also introduced me to home brewing because people were like, oh yeah, I can make that. And that worked in the company. And then, we started picking up me and some, two buddies of mine, picked up some home brewing equipment and for very inexpensive, made our way down to Dan's home brewing in East Van.
Yeah.
like you do. And that's a great place to shop and stuff, but the instructions were a little vague, and where my buddy lives, where we were brewing, didn't get the best cell service at the time. So needless to say, stuff went sideways really quick. We tried Googling, but like again, cell service was not very good, so we're waiting, you know, trying to get information downloaded. And so, yeah, it was a very happy nightmare kind of thing. And it turned out not good. it definitely gets you there, but it wasn't very good in retrospect, which is anybody's first experience brewing craft beer, more than likely, in retrospect, at least. But it did drive us to go and brew another beer, and then you get a couple under your belt. Second one tastes a lot better than the first, and was a lot easier brew day. And then moved up. We're doing extract at the time, and then we moved up to all grain, and then started coming up with our own recipes. My own recipes after that, and that's when things kind of, it got better. And then you start to kind of turn some heads a little bit. Me being a graphic designer at the time, the labels of our beer always were better than the beer itself, but it started eventually getting better. And there was like some, I guess you can say, signs of maybe there's something there kind of thing. So
for people, maybe, I think the idea of homebrew is probably fairly discouraging to people just because, one, you need to go out and purchase equipment, but two, it's time consuming. Mm-hmm. What does the timeline look like on a homebrew?
If it's all grain, it's the same as a commercial.
Okay.
The time, that's the interesting thing, is that the amount of time that it takes on a homebrew scale is no matter what size of brewery, it takes approximately the same amount of time, no matter how big or small you are. So really it's including cleanup, it's usually about an 8-hour day. Right.
And now, then it's sitting in a tank for a few weeks.
2 to 3 weeks, yeah. Sometimes longer. It depends on the kind of beer that you're making.
Yeah.
But if you're making like a pale ale or something like that, it's like 2, maybe 3 weeks tops if you're going to be dry hopping it and all that kind of stuff. But it can be daunting at first. But as far as time goes, the brew day is the most physically intensive. So I usually will recommend, in order to get one under your belt and in order to have like a quicker brew day and in order to have your highest chance of success, I usually recommend doing an extract or what's called a partial mash. And so that is your base malts, which creates a lot, gives you all the fermentables that you need. Mm-hmm. That's what creates the alcohol. That is usually an extract. And then you have character malts that you like steep in water and then add it to the boil. And that cuts down at least an hour or more from your brewing time.
Okay.
So it requires less space because you can use like a smaller pot on your stove and then just like usually like a 20 liter pot on your stove. And then when you put it into the fermenter, you can add some water to dilute it. It's like the easiest way to do it. I usually recommend that. It's a shorter time frame. You can still get really good beer. You don't get as much control, but you can knock out a beer in like probably 3 or 4 hours, and be happy, at least content with the results.
What type of volume are people homebrewing at?
Usually 5 gallons, which is about 20 liters.
Okay.
So usually 20 liter batches is a typical. There's some people that do 40 liter batches. I know someone who brews substantially more than that. And it's one of those things he does with his neighbors kind of thing. So they all pitch in a certain amount of ingredients and then he goes and brews it. And then he, you know, they each have like a kegerator in their garage or whatever. And so they show up with their kegs and he fills them up and stuff. Right. So it's kind of a community thing that he does, I guess he can say. So,
yeah. Being a graphic designer, I'm going to assume you're a pretty creative guy.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Sure.
We'll go with that. What's the most creative or unique homebrew that you ever did? I'm assuming you tried some fun things.
I did, you know, I gotta say, because we were talking a little bit about different beers and all that kind of stuff and what's trendy and all that kind of stuff. And I guess to quote a friend of mine, because I don't want, it's my buddy Jason, because I don't want to take credit for this, but I enjoy beer flavored beer for the most part.
Fair enough.
And I also really enjoy English style beers, like really traditional English style beers. So those were kind of the things that I was more fixated on. But I would probably say the wilder stuff that I did, the weirdest one that I'd say that I did that worked out and we actually brew it here is it's called Ghosts and it is our pumpkin spice latte milk stout. And we brewed that on the homebrew level, like because there was a homebrew contest and pumpkin was the theme. Mm-hmm. And so I came up with the idea that we do a pumpkin spice latte.
That's pretty
because,
cool.
But I wanted to do it in a stout. And so what we did is we used pumpkin spice and cold brewed coffee. And then the milk stout kind of gave it some more body and all that kind of that milky kind of body to it. And that was the weirdest one, I guess you can say. It's not overly weird, but I didn't think it would turn out good at all because I'm not a... I like the occasional pumpkin beer, but I don't go and seek them out, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, but that one, it's kind of, you crack the bottle and you have a little sip of it and you're like, whoa, that actually turned out not awful. And actually it turned out really good. So yeah, but yeah, that made it onto, we brew that every year now.
What time of year do you brew that? Cause I want to try it. So I'm coming back.
Of course you do. You can, well, you look for it in October, right? So, we usually, that's usually when we release that one. So yeah.
One of the most fascinating things for me about breweries is where does it go from like this crazy idea in a dude's head? Because mm-hmm. I think most males in Greater Vancouver have had this idea of, wouldn't it be so cool to own a brewery? Mm. To, okay, we're actually going to do this thing. So mm-hmm. obviously with your background and home brewing for a few years, mm-hmm. you have a little bit more knowledge into actually what goes into making beer than most. But where does it go from, we're making some beer, we're doing some cool things with pumpkin spice lattes, to I think we can make a business out of this thing.
I would probably say when when you start to feel that the quality is getting somewhere. But making sure, like, when, like, I'm my own worst critic and enemy in a lot of ways.
I think that's a valuable thing to have as a business person, though.
It can, but it can be really a pain in the ass sometimes. I'm very critical of where I get my criticisms from. Mm-hmm. So, like, what you don't want is the whole, my mom thinks I'm cool kind of thing, right? It's, you want to kind of, if you really want to know, are you getting somewhere? You basically need to find someone with a lot of experience and with a good palate who knows what they're talking about and will give you feedback that is unfiltered. As much as it's still, we're human beings, we're naturally nice for the most part. So they'll try and be polite about it. But the more direct feedback you can, and honest feedback you can get. And when you start to see steps where it's just like, you know, you're not going to, home brewing is hard, first of all. It's not hard to do. It's hard to get really good at. Mm-hmm. And I will say that it's harder than brewing on a commercial scale because the variables are all over the place. It's not a controlled environment like it is here. So it's going to be harder getting that batch to batch. But when you start to get some batches where you're like, hey, you kind of knocked, you know, what you did here, this kind of knocked it out of the park. Or, wow, that was really good. You know, do that again. And which is always a nightmare when your home brewer is like, do that thing again. It's hard to do that again. Hard to do it again. Yes. Yeah. So, but when you start getting that feedback where you're just like, no, that's a really good recipe. If you can nail that, if you're in a situation where you can nail that and produce it like that over and over again, you got something. And so you kind of start to, I guess you can say, farm your feedback pool that you want. And when you start, you know, so when you start really getting somewhere in there where they're being realistic, like as critical as you are of yourself, and you're like, no, this is, you're not crazy, this is actually pretty good, I think then you kind of like, maybe I can't.
Where did you look for that feedback?
I have a tightly knit group of friends. So I would say Warren Boyer, Tim Vandergrift, both of them are part, Steve, oh my God, he's gonna kick my ass.
That's Steve.
No. Sorry, Steve. I gotta get your name out, man.
It's like, all that I'm thinking about right now, Carl, is those Schweppes commercials.
Steve. No. Steve Sheldon. I can't believe. Sorry, Steve. They're all part of the Fraser Valley Fermentalists. Fermentalists. Fraser Mills. Fraser Valley Fermentals is the homebrew club I was part of, but Fraser Mills, they're okay. The new operation opening up in Port Moody there. So, and then my buddy Matt and Pete and any guys that are part of the Fraser Valley Fermentalists, I look to as well. They're polite, but they will tell you like it is. And guys like Tim and Warren are also BJCP judges. So that's a beer judge certification program. So they get that certification by having very trained palates.
I need to talk to these guys, Carl, because I want to be a beer judge.
It's not I've heard it's gotten a little bit easier.
It sounds like the greatest job in the world.
Whoa. The problem is that one thing I've heard is that once you go through it, then you might not like beer. You might be, it's hard. Then it's hard to train the judge after you've just become a judge, if that makes
Fair
sense.
Enough. Yeah.
Right. It's like being, you get through that. I've never been to post-secondary, but was it second year students are like, they know everything. And they're very hypercritical, a whole bunch of things. And then, was it year three or four, they realize nothing matters or something. So you kind of go, you know, from what I understand, you kind of go through that a little bit as a beer judge. So be warned if you do want to do that. It's you can get involved in some really cool things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're going to look at beer a little bit differently, at least for the first little bit.
Understand that like everyone has a different palate. I get it. Certain things are going to be super attractive to me that are not attractive to you. Mm-hmm. And I've like tried these beers that have won awards in the Canadian Brewing Association or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this isn't that good. But okay. I guess I don't know the criteria that they're going off of and what that specific category is looking like or whatever.
Yeah. Well, there's think of it as a guideline because it is providing some objectivity to that is very subjective, which is taste.
Right.
So like, you know, we got third place for our lager, or the highway lager.
Awesome.
Which was shocking. Especially when you pride yourself on your English beers and then you get like a straight up lager that wins. I don't envy the beer judges in that category. Like I like a good lager, but when you're having however many lager entries, I think it was probably like 20 or 30 or more lager entries. You're tasting the same thing, the same kind of flavors all the time. And it's hard to, you're talking like really subtle differences between all of them. But so what it does is it's basically adding like a baseline. So if you're saying that this is a Helles lager, then you know, these are the trademark, this is the trademark aroma profile. These are the trademark flavor profiles. These are for flavor. These are the trademark, this is what it kind of looks like in color. This is how much, you know, this is the kind of carbonation it has. This is the kind of mouthfeel it has. So this is the kind of like, this is the baseline of what you're tasting. And then there is a subjective, like overall impression as that goes along with it as well. Now, is it the end all be all? No, because you can make an excellent lager where you either don't know how to put it in the right category, you don't know what category it fits, may not even fit in a category, and it'll probably score terribly. But is it a good beer? Probably is. So like we did a thrift shop. It's a dry hopped malt liquor. It doesn't fit into any category. I guess it'd be a specialty category or something, but some people loved it. Some people didn't and everything, but that's something that probably wouldn't do well. I'm guessing Tim and Warren would probably tell me I'm wrong, but I'm guessing it would be hard to get a good score with that one. Cause where do you put it?
Right.
So
it's a little more detailed than me just saying this is a good beer and not a good beer.
It can be. It can be. But my whole thing is, and being in the beer industry and being a brewer and all that kind of stuff, it's been a very long, it's very few and far between where you have a beer and you say, this is bad.
Totally.
It's usually, even if it's a beer that I don't like, I will have things that I appreciate. I will say, it is not a bad beer. I don't like it. And the reason is these are the flavors that I'm getting that I don't particularly like. A good example at the Weathered Festival. I don't know if you, the Weathered Beer Festival, I don't know if you went.
I know there's like a shit ton of beer festivals.
Okay. So Weathered Beer Festival is like $100 a ticket, okay. But everything is in like champagne bottles and it's like real, like on average, the bottle's probably like, if it's a small bottle, it's probably like a $25 or $30 bottle.
Okay.
Everything's barrel aged. Everything's sour. Everything's a lambic or guise or goza or barrel aged, whatever. So there is quite a few beers. And like these are like some of the best breweries in the world. There were some beers there that were extremely complex. I would never drink them again, right? But I'm glad that I had that taste because I'm like, okay, so this is what a sherry barrel or a brandy barrel tastes like. Mm-hmm. Cool. I'll never do that, but because it doesn't really do it for me. But a lot of people really liked it. But I'm glad I tried that stuff because that's how you learn. So anyway, I digress a little bit.
Okay, so you go from having a solid group of friends that are fairly involved in the beer industry.
Yes.
Saying, I think you've got something here.
Yes.
There's a few beers that you're doing that are very good.
Not terrible. Yeah.
Like, what's the next step in terms of like, I should leave my job. I should start a business. It sounds like you have a pretty... a very smart and very patient wife in terms of being able to build a business plan. And was she kind of the catapult in terms of like opening the doors or?
Well, it was one of those things where, put it this way, I don't like, she got me, she was very supportive of my serious hobby. And to the point where when I started kind of being like, maybe I will, maybe I won't and all that kind of stuff. She ordered me a couple of books as like gifts and stuff, said, this is a book that is literally says how to start a brewery.
That's so cool.
So that was great. So it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to be serious, if I'm really serious, I actually need to show that I'm being serious and I need to actually put an actual plan together and look at this thing, do some research, look at this thing and make sure some of the numbers work. Because, I know that our beer is going to taste good. And then I know that our design work is going to, marketing and all that stuff, branding is going to be good. So that's taken care of, but that's not everything. Doing that research, I started putting the business plan and stuff together and I got through a good chunk of it and everything. And at one point, I was getting a little bit busy with work and all that kind of stuff as well. And Brandy said, hey, do you mind if I see you kind of got a lot of stuff in place, but do you mind if I kind of take this and run with it? Cause I'm curious to see if it's a thing too. And so she's a psych student and has however many years of university under her belt. And if there's one thing that university teaches you to do, it's to research and write. And she's exceptional at both of those. So a lot of these, thoughts that are anecdotal at best, for the amount of research that I did, she was actually, brought these, back them up with facts. Like, here's some data that actually says this is a thing. And here's some data that says, there's a growth in this particular market and demographic and stuff. So she basically took something that I started, finished it, and made it really good. And then that started, taken around to other people that you trust that are more business oriented taking it around to them and, you know, showing them, and they're like, this, you're, you know, I've had your beer is good. And this seems like it makes sense. And then that's when things started to happen a little bit faster. You know, she was really a big catalyst to actually make that stuff, everything a reality.
For sure.
Yeah. Big time.
One thing I really like talking about with, whether it's craft beer or like it really goes broad across a lot of industries, is brand versus product. Mm. One, like, how much time do you spend on developing a brand prior to opening doors versus beer? Obviously, with your homebrew background, you've got beer dialed in. You've mm-hmm. got product dialed in. Mm-hmm. But what is more important, opening doors? Is it brand, beer, combination of both? Or, like, what was your experience with that?
Well, the one thing about our branding is, like, remember I was a graphic designer.
Yeah.
And remember I said our labels look better than the actual bottle, that the beer that was in the bottles.
We walked in the door today into your tasting room just as a compliment to you. And Carl's like, oh, I really like their logo.
Oh, thank you very much. So that logo has been around for quite some time. It's the difference, other than some subtle differences, really the only difference between that logo now and back when we were homebrewing was the trademark on it. So really, Silver Valley Brewing, we're not located in the Silver Valley, but where we started homebrewing is in a buddy's carport on Silver Valley Road.
That's
and
cool.
Yeah. when we found out we weren't going to be in the Silver Valley, we're like, well, do we do a name change and stuff? I think we came up with a bunch of different names and none of them really had any zip to them. So we kind of just stuck with what we had, and it has a good story behind it. So luckily the branding was kind of in place. But to answer your, question, I particularly think it's both. If you're going in, because whether you like it or not, what the customer sees before they actually try your beer is your branding. So it doesn't have to be necessarily be groundbreaking, but it needs to get whatever message you're trying to put to get to the customer, it needs to get to them. So, when I was a designer, I always looked at it as when people say, oh, you're an artist, I'm like, I'm not an artist, I'm a designer. What is the difference? Is that an artist is to be, basically that with a designer, you don't want anything left to be to subjectivity. You're trying to communicate.
It's almost like an artist is like to be interpreted.
Yes.
Different people interpret it differently.
Yes. Whereas with a designer, it's meant to be understood. Mm-hmm. So what you did is meant to be understood. And so, if who you are and what you're all about isn't coming across in the liquor store, or it's just not, even if it's a simple thing that just doesn't pop off the shelf, you're probably not going to, someone still will try it, but the likelihood that someone's going to not try it is a lot higher. So you do need to have that in place.
I had,
as well as the product.
Yeah. I had one of the guys from Strathcona on, and I don't know if you've seen their labels or remember their labels, but they're like super bright colors mm-hmm. and they stick out on shelves.
Yes.
And so I was asking him, like, how much effort or thought do you guys put into labels on cans in order to stand out from what you're up, like what is next to you? Mm-hmm. And the answer was a lot.
Yes.
Because as a consumer, mm-hmm. I go in and I'm based on the mood I'm in that day or whatever, I'm thinking of a specific type of beer. Mm-hmm. Right now it's hazies just because that's what I'm into. But like, yep. Depending on time of year, in the summer, on hot days, I'll go for wheat beers or saisons. In the winter, sometimes it's more hoppy IPAs or stouts or whatever. Mm-hmm. But have this this vision in my head of, okay, I want a stout today. It's December 1st. It's snowing outside. It's cold. Mm-hmm. I want a stout. Mm-hmm. And I'll go in and I'll find stouts. And then I like just trying stuff I've never tried before. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of brand loyalty, and I'm sure that's out there with a lot of consumers, but I'm sure a lot are like me too, in terms of just like, I want to try something I haven't had before. Mm-hmm. And I'll find three stouts and I'll be like, this label appeals to me more. Mm-hmm. Is there much thought going into like, how do we stick out from competition? Because there is a lot of competition in Greater Vancouver now.
There is a lot of, yeah. And then, cause we were talking a little bit earlier, yeah, before the broadcast about competition. Mm-hmm. I went on a thing saying I don't look at it as traditional competition.
Yeah.
But like, I will admit, in the liquor store, it's different.
Sure.
Right? Because you're literally right next to everybody. And you're like, in just the example you're saying, you're probably lined up against like 10 different stouts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is important to stick out. So we kind of, it really helps when you're on the design portion. It does help when you kind of pick a direction to start with. So you have kind of a, if you look at any of our labels, they're kind of a similar layout, because you do want to be able to pick, you want every one of your beers labeled to look very distinct and different from each other. But at the same time, you need those callbacks to make sure that, oh, this is Silver Valley. Right.
Exactly.
So me being a designer, I thought about that stuff very early on, even on the homebrew side of things. So I was able to pull stuff, but it does, I don't put as much time and effort as I did when I was first coming up with that stuff, only because we have kind of a template of what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I do make sure, I do want our stuff to pop. Right now our Jetpacks was Yes, which is our West Coast IPA. There's a lot of people that don't even like IPAs that want to try it out because they think the label looks cool. So it's effective. And yeah, I do put a fair bit of time into them sometimes. And sometimes I'm knocking my head against the wall because I don't know what to do.
Right. On kind of the same lines of labels, and one thing I did want to mention or ask you about was names.
Yeah.
Your names are super creative.
Thank you.
And they also have nothing to do with the beer.
No, not really. Or no.
Not from that I can see.
Particularly the Jetpacks one. Yeah.
But there's one, what's the one called? Tickle something?
Well, that's a collab. So that was Steve Black from Old Abbey that named that one.
Okay.
So, but that was 10 Tickles. That's his. He's got some great names too. he does a beet beer, like it's a beet sour.
Yeah.
And that one's called Beets by Steve. So that's a great, he's got a lot of stuff like that. Like, but ours, we actually have a theme with all of ours. Is all of our beers are actually named after songs, and they're usually songs that I like. Cool. Or, in some cases, ones that my wife or something likes as well. But there's only one beer that's not named after a song, and that's our broken label, We Heavy, because that is named from, that's the name of the very first beer I ever brewed. That was the horrible beer that went sideways that I was talking about earlier. So I kept that one, and that's kind of a modified version of that recipe.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of our beers, so Dark Necessities, Mocha Stout, Jetpacks was Yes, that's band Periphery. We do Black Days, which is Fell on Black Days, my Soundgarden. So, Thrift Shop is Macklemore.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the beer sometimes, but it does. I think sometimes it kind of touches on it a little bit, but it's kind of, what song does this kind of make me feel like, like does it kind of feel like the beer? So anyway, I don't know. Not much thought that goes into it other than
I like
that.
So. I like that there's a theme. And
it makes it easier.
Totally. What song does this one remind me of? Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. What was I going to say? I lost my train of thought.
It's there okay. I do that all the time.
We were talking earlier about direction that you want to take the brewery in. And yeah. I know there are very different business plans throughout a lot of the breweries in Greater Vancouver, mm-hmm. some wanting to be a very localized neighborhood, mm-hmm. recognized in the very small city that they're in,
yep.
but not distribute outside of that. Some wanting to be wanting to grow massively and focus on distribution. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that it's really important to know your direction going into the opening the business.
Yes.
What's the direction that you're wanting to take?
Well, so when we're talking the direction, at the time I was talking more of like the flavor, the type of the style of beers.
Okay. Yeah.
So at the start we started off with primarily English styles, and then through experimentation, you know, things obviously change. Mm-hmm. We did originally want to start everything pretty much, sell everything exclusively through the tasting room, like yep. growlers. And we did, for quite some time. As you grow though, as you get, you know, you do need those extra cash flow that distribution does offer. So we kind of discovered that like we were doing well, but we needed to do better. So, you know, that was kind of a learning curve that we went through. And that's when, once we had our beers nailed down, our core beers nailed down, we needed to expand. And the way that we expanded was we got those three core beers contract brewed. So we're using Craft Collective or Factory for some people if they're not familiar with them, for those beers. Same recipe. I go there and I oversee the brew day and everything. But that was something that, you know, down the road, our vision had always been, we're in this spot until we grow big enough where we need a manufacturing facility to feed this spot. In between that, like, that is basically opening up a whole second brewery with all the capital that goes along with it. So in between that time, we do the contract brew with those beers to help me keep my sanity for so I'm not brewing the same thing all the time. And also, you know, getting those extra channels of cash flow from the liquor stores and stuff. You don't make as much profit on those as you do what we sell in house.
Yep.
But, you know, the more you sell, you know, then it starts to become more viable and stuff. So that's the end goal. That's kind of our long-term plan.
Talking about your specialty in terms of English style beers or mm-hmm. What you like to brew.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to be true to yourself and your brand loyalty or your brand image
mm-hmm.
as one of the best, or the, like, you're trying to be the best English style brewery in Greater Vancouver, whatever the goal is, mm-hmm. versus staying on trend with what is what's hopping in Greater Vancouver at this time?
Loves the pun. it's a real, sometimes you got to get pulled. You need someone to kind of pull you in a direction a little bit.
Yeah.
Being a brewer and co-owner, you kind of look things through a different lens than if you were just the brewer.
Sure.
If someone said that, you know, you got to brew this kind of beer and all that kind of stuff, when, you know, it's just like, well, no, this is what I enjoy brewing. This is what I want to do. Well, I would be, if I was just a brewer, I'd be screaming bloody murder and half-assing it and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't be, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wouldn't be, it would be more begrudgingly doing it.
Takes a bit of the fun out of it.
It takes a bit of the fun out of it. So what I think is important to do, cause if you're not an owner and you are a brewer, you're going to be asked to brew beers that you don't want to brew. That's just how it happens. And so I think what you can do, listen to ownership's advice, and, you know, they'll probably bring you samples of something that, like, say it's a hazy beer or something, because we didn't make a hazy beer when we first started. Mm-hmm. But I that's one thing, because my wife actually doesn't drink beer. She doesn't even drink. There's a great video of her trying a beer that was her idea, and it was the best face you've ever seen in your life. But she, having that perspective though is kind of important, because she's saying, well, I know you don't want to, you're not really crazy about the whole hazy beer thing, but that juice, they're selling tons of it. This other brewery, they're selling tons of that. Maybe you should at least make one. And I said, okay. So ideally what happens, you get a bunch of the beers and you take a bunch of samples and you do your research, and you're drinking beer for research. What I would encourage a brewer to do is to take what it is that they're bringing to you, and then find a way saying, okay, I don't like this style, or I'm not huge on this style. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to brew a version of the style that I would drink. And that's kind of what we did. We have Crush, which we don't have in stock right now because we can't keep it in stock.
It's a good problem to have.
So we will end up contracting that now, because every time we don't have it, where is it? When are we going to get more of it? So that is a version of a hazy beer that I personally enjoyed. So I think that if you are going to get pushed into something that you're not excited about, you can get yourself excited about it by putting your own spin on it.
That's what I like so much about this industry, is that yes, you can be on trend, yes, you can brew a style of beer, but you can be so creative with how you do it.
Yeah, and because there's, I don't even know how many strains of hops there are now. So but even with the existing strains, adding them in at different times, dry hopping in a different way, having a different ratio of whatever you're doing it with, you can, using different kinds of yeast, using different malts. There's a whole bunch of, you can use, if we wanted to, I could take basically the same recipe of, say, dat juice, which if Cody wanted to supply me with that, that'd be nice. it would probably be a very simple recipe, but I would be able to take the base of that recipe and make some of my own adjustments to it, because what they're doing is not wrong. It's delicious. But if I was going to make it mine, I could probably take the exact same ingredients, adjust the variables here and there. Might taste completely different. Well, not completely different, around the same area, but it would have its own distinct flavor to it.
Yeah.
So it's one thing that you got to love about it, right? So it's a lot of fun to play with stuff like that, for sure.
Where, do you have any predictions on where you see the next big trend is? Because I'm a consumer. I've no idea how to brew beer, nor do I ever want to try, because the stuff that I drink is too good and I don't want to ruin beer for myself.
Don't do that. You should totally, no, I'm serious. You should totally brew your own beer.
But that's other people are better, right? I'm really good at selling houses. Yeah. You're really good at brewing beer.
Well,
you do your thing. I'm going to drink it.
Yeah. But it's fun though. Like that's why I encourage people to do it. Like, if you've never bungee jumped before, go and bungee jump once, and then you never have to do it again afterwards. Fair. And I can tell you, when you walk into a homebrew shop for the first time and you buy some equipment and everything, they're probably thinking as well that you're buying this equipment, you're probably going to brew it once and you're never going to use it again.
It's going to be on Craigslist in a couple weeks.
So talk a buddy into doing it with you.
Carl?
Yeah. And then do it once. And then anytime he asks you when you want to brew another batch, you'll be like, what are you talking about?
So from my perspective as a consumer, I look at a few years ago, like overpowering hoppy IPAs were like the thing, and everyone was trying to just hop the shit out of beer.
That was probably about 5 years ago when I was first starting to get in. Yeah, the 100 IBU, 130 IBU, 200
IBU. Just burn your tongue off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then there was like this sour craze.
Yeah.
Like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I don't know.
Yeah, it was about three years ago, yeah.
Again, from my perspective, now hazies are like the thing that everyone is trying to perfect.
Yes.
Do you have any predictions on what the next one is?
Well, this year was lagers.
This year's lagers. Interesting. Oh, man,
big time.
Okay.
So here's the thing about the hazy beers, is that they do taste really good, right? But you got to think about what they do for the non-traditional craft beer drinker.
Right.
They are extremely, anybody that's like, I don't want anything too hoppy. Well, in their brain, they're thinking bitterness. Mm-hmm. But you're like, well, no, this isn't bitter. There's a lot of hop flavor, and they try something, and like our crush has like a very like juicy flavor and stuff too. And they're like, oh, I like this. You know, how much fruit did you put in? They're like, that's all just hop flavor. And that something pops in their brain, and now they like,
yeah.
So it's a really nice. So it is. It's one of those styles that appeals to the beer nerd and non-beer nerd alike, or fringe craft beer drinker. So that's why it's almost like a gateway craft beer for a lot of people. So if you think about it, I think, and I'm probably out of date with this, craft beer in BC is about 20% of the market.
Is that it?
I think so. It's probably higher now. Like that, this might be from like 5 years ago. Okay. I can't remember. So like for the last data I had is probably higher now. It's say 20%. That's of the beer drinking market.
Sure.
What do you think the other 80% is?
Budweiser and shit like that.
Regardless Canadian what you call
Budweiser,
it,
Coke,
it's
just
regardless what you call it, it's either a makeup of
it's lagers, right?
Yeah, some kind of, whether it's Corona, whether it's Bud, whether it's any of those macro brands, it's lagers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people do like supporting local breweries, right? But a lot of those, up until recently, those local breweries didn't have a lager. A lot of those drinkers, or a lot of those local beer drinkers, are like, if this local beer drinker had a lager that I like, I'd totally drink it. I'll support it.
Totally.
So that's one of the big things. And I like a good lager. Like if it's a really well-made lager, it's really good. I can't be drinking IPAs and stuff all the time. So yeah, that's big, because that's where you're going to get your market growth from. As far as other trends go, I think what you're going to start seeing is a trend back towards core beers. And by core beers, I mean, a lager would be one, but pale ale, like simple West Coast pale ales, mm-hmm. or even like an English style pale ale. You're going to start seeing brown ales and red ales more. The IPAs, well, you've even seen traditional West Coast IPAs start to kind of scale back their bitterness. They have more of they're almost like they're straddling the line. Some of them, like they're clear like a traditional West Coast IPA, but they have a flavor profile that's kind of between West Coast IPA and hazy. So I think you're going to start to see more of that, because people really like crazy, they like crazy beers. But at the end of the day, they're probably going to have one, exactly. Right? So people like to have it where they can share a four pack with only one other person, where they have one or two of those beers. They're not wasted at the end of the day, and they can still taste things after they're done, enjoying their beer. So I think you're going to start to see a trend back towards that, where again, beer flavored beers.
So talking about beer flavored beers and things you can drink multiple of.
Yes.
The guy from Strathcona that was on the podcast, we kept coming back to this word crushable.
Yes.
And he said, brewers don't like that word.
No, quaffable.
So we were trying to find a substitute. We're like, well, it's a beer that you can drink six or seven or eight of. It's not like an overpowering IPA that you can only drink one of. It's crushable.
Yes.
And so we were trying to find a synonym or something different to say.
Yes.
You have one?
Just not that.
You don't like crushable.
Enjoyable. Sessionable is one that was used.
Sessionable, I like.
Sessionable, okay. is one that's been used a lot. So like an ISA is a India Session Ale. Yep. So sessionable beers. So those are usually, a session beer is usually something under 5% is usually what it is.
Okay.
But crushable is something I don't know. I think
when you think of crushable, are you thinking of like a kokanee?
I'm thinking of Ogre in Revenge of the Nerds drinking a beer really fast and then crushing the can against his head. That's what I think of crushable.
Okay.
But I probably just dated myself.
Almost like
time.
Not appreciating the beer.
Well, you can drink it fat. I think what most people refer to as crushable is that you drink it, you're done the beer, and you don't even realize that you just downed like a 7.5% beer, right? It doesn't taste like it. So you can drink it like a 3 or 4 percenter, but then it hits you like a 7%. So I think that's what a lot of people think of with modern crushable beers.
Fair enough.
But
okay, let's start using sessionable.
But at the same time, our hazy beer is called crush. So whatever.
There you go. You're contradicting yourself.
I'm contradicting myself.
Kevin, thanks so much for having us out here.
No worries.
Guys, if you have not hit up Silver Valley Brewing, come check it out on 224th and Maple Ridge. I've only tried two of their beers thus far, but the coffee cerveza.
Yeah, many say maniac.
Maniac?
Yeah.
That's a solid beer.
Yeah.
Carl and I are probably going to stick around and try a couple more, but
awesome.
If we've got time.
Yeah, we got a squid ink. Weird. We got a squid ink stout.
I saw that one.
Yes.
That was next on my radar.
Yes. So it's almost like an oyster stout kind of thing. So
I like it.
If you're looking for something weird.
Thanks so much for having us out here.
No worries.
Congrats on the success thus far and looking to see big things from you.
I hope I didn't ramble too much, but I probably did. I will not watch
this. That's a podcast. That's what podcasts are for.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Guys, if you want to check out Silver Valley Brewing, hit them up on Instagram at Silver Valley Brewing.
At Silver Valley Brewing Instagram. If you're on Twitter, it's at capital S, capital V, lowercase brewing. Facebook, just Silver Valley Brewing on Facebook, and then www.silvervalleybrewing.com.
Beautiful. Guys, I'd love to hear feedback. Hit me up on Instagram, denny.dumoff. Good night.